And the court will proceed to the sixth case of the day, the United States versus Middlebrook. Mr. Omar.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. May it please the court, this case should be remanded for resentencing because the value of the shareholder note concealed in bankruptcy was never determined. The failure to apply Mr. Middlebrook's understanding of the value of the note led to the application of a higher sentencing guideline range. It's the application of an incorrect guideline range that affected the defendant's substantial rights and constituted plain error.
Mr. Omar, I take it that your argument is that Mr. Middlebrook subjectively knew that he wasn't going to be able to pay on the note, and thus his subjective understanding of the value of the note is what controls. Is that?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so as of what date are we supposed to assess his subjective knowledge? Because it seems to me that could be a moving target.
Well, Your Honor, it's at the time of the bankruptcy filing, and this actually, the bankruptcy was filed October 4th.
The date of the bankruptcy filing? Now, what reason is there? I'm not familiar with that rule anywhere, actually, in bankruptcy law, that if you are of the opinion, you know, that you can't pay, then suddenly the debt's gone. That would reward some very reckless behavior on the part of debtors.
Well, Your Honor, prior to the filing of the bankruptcy, the fraud was not committed until he filed the bankruptcy schedule.
Right, but you're talking about evaluation. So under your rule, people could go accrue all sorts of debt, squander all of their assets, make themselves unable to pay the debt, and then they get to fail to disclose that in bankruptcy?
Well, no, Your Honor. The intended loss that is to be applied here is Mr. Middlebrook's understanding of the value of the note at the time.
I don't understand why it's not an objective. I mean, the note is the note. I mean, for all I know, Mr. Middlebrook may have some long-lost relative who will pass away tomorrow and bequeath him $100 million. I mean, it's an account that needs to be disclosed.
Yes, Your Honor, it's an account that needs to be disclosed. The law, the case law that we've cited states that it's Mr. Middlebrook's understanding of the shareholder note that controls the intended loss calculations. And we feel that the intended loss calculation, that analysis wasn't completed. There was no determination as to what Mr. Middlebrook understood the value of that note to be.
Because the court thought that was an irrelevant inquiry. That's why it didn't happen.
Your Honor, I can't speak to the court's thinking at the time, but the court did identify the rule to be applied, but took the balance of the shareholder note without making any finding as to what Mr. Middlebrook understood that value to be. And, Your Honor, that was an...
Look, I mean, the shareholder note isn't like, you know, Mr. Middlebrook's favorite Picasso painting, you know, where perhaps people might have different notions of value, although even that you could get appraised, I assume. It was a note in a certain dollar amount.
Yes, Your Honor, and there's a difference between the note's balance and that note's value. The bankruptcy court had a right to collect on that note. That's what they would have received. There was no determination made as to the value of that right to collect. This wasn't $1 million in a bank account that the bankruptcy court was going to obtain. This was just a note which indicated that the bankruptcy court had a right
here. But the judge said he would have given him the same sentence no matter what. And it seems to me that is pretty dispositive of the sentence. I think the restitution part of the problem is a little more complicated. Doesn't that settle the sentence part?
Well, no, Your Honor, because the sentencing guidelines were not calculated correctly.
Well, so what? He said he gave him a sentence way below the guidelines anyway. And he said, I'd give him that sentence no matter what. In other words, he wasn't going to pay attention to the guidelines, apparently.
Yes, Your Honor. The court is instructed to correctly calculate the guidelines, and the failure to do so is affects the defendant's substantial rights. The guidelines are advisory at this point, but they're not something to be disregarded, and an incorrect guideline calculation constitutes an error. The district court was to make a central finding of fact that would have determined the correct guideline.
Well, let's assume he made an error. It was, you know, he said, If I made an error, that's too bad. I'd give him the same sentence anyway.
Yes, Your Honor, and Mr. Middlebrook is entitled to have his sentencing guidelines calculated correctly, even in the event that the district court makes a finding that it would give Mr. Middlebrook the same sentence. Additionally, the district court sentenced Mr. Middlebrook as if he concealed $1,000,001 in assets. If the district court were to resentence him and with the understanding that Mr. Middlebrook did not conceal such a figure in assets, then not only would his sentencing guideline change, but the ultimate sentence may change as well, considering that the district court would sentence similar defendants in a similar fashion. And so, Your Honors, I also want to make clear that we aren't conceding the standard of review that we provided in our opening brief. We do feel that this issue was properly preserved below. However, Mr. Middlebrook feels that he can meet both standards of review. The failure to appropriately find intended loss constituted error, and that was an essential fact that the court needed to determine the appropriate guideline range. The failure to make an essential finding of fact of this nature made the error plain, and this error was harmful as well. Although the district court stated that he would give him the same sentence even if he made the incorrect guideline calculations, because the sentencing guidelines is the baseline of a bedrock principle to a reasonable sentence, this case should be remanded for resentencing. Your Honor, we feel that there was Mr. Middlebrook was prejudiced by the district court's failures, and that he is at least entitled to the appropriate calculation of his guidelines.
Did you want to speak to the restitution issue?
Yes, Your Honor. Restitution is also being challenged here. We feel that without the appropriate finding to the shareholder note, restitution has to be recalculated as well. And so we would ask that the court find in favor of the defendant and remand the case for resentencing. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Omar. Mr. Fullerton? Pardon?
Mr. Love, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Love.
Thank you.
Looking at the brief, not the...
May it please the court. Good morning. Your Honors, there was no clear error by the district court in its calculation of the intended loss. The defendant in this case has spent substantial time positing that it was a necessary fact-finding for the district court judge to determine what the actual ability of Mr. Middlebrook was to make full payment on the shareholder note as of the time he filed bankruptcy. I suggest to the court that, in fact, that is not a necessary fact-finding by Judge Reinhard. And I would point to the Fearman case. In the Fearman case, there was a building, and the value of the building was at issue in terms of calculating the loss. And in Fearman, the lower court had actually determined that the building had no value. So the lower court in Fearman had made the identical fact finding that this defendant now seeks to have to say Judge Reinhard erred in not finding or not making. In Fearman, this court sent the case back to the district court, and the reason it sent it back is related to what the defendant argues, but different in that it sent it back for a determination of the defendant's subjective intent, the cornerstone of the finding of intended loss. The reason that fact-finding is not necessary in this case, I think, can be shown through an example. If Mr. Middlebrook's position at trial and his position at the time of sentencing was that he did not owe this note, it was not truly a debt to Federal Telecom. So, obviously, he was not considering on the day he filed his schedules whether he could or could not repay the note, because whether he could or could not didn't make any difference. He did not intend to pay it, whether or not he had the ability.
This and was his theory that it was some sort of salary payment?
His theory was he referred to it as deferred income, Your Honor. Yeah. He had actually withdrawn those amounts from Federal Telecom in varying amounts over the years, had not included them in income or recognized them in income during in the years that he took them out. And then his theory was that as a result of the filing of the bankruptcy, he would then have to recognize it as income in the year of the bankruptcy.
His intent isn't relevant to the restitution aspect of the matter, is it?
No, Your Honor, but with regard to restitution, there is ample evidence of the ability to pay. I'm not trying to say that it was a direct fact-finding by the district court, but there was substantial evidence in terms of what his assets were around the time of the bankruptcy filing. The other thing is, I don't understand the case law on restitution to hinge on whether or not the defendant is capable of paying. That would not be in order if we look at the...
Or is this a case of restitution for not paying a debt, is it? Which is a rather interesting concept when you consider it. Applying criminal sanctions to make somebody pay a debt. That's sort of like debtor's prison, isn't it?
I understand the theory of the court.
I think this is a kind of a unique kind of a situation. But I have been unable to analyze that aspect of it.
The fact that I would urge the court to add into its analysis is that the bankruptcy trustee, in fact, could have collected on that note, and it's the failure of Mr. Middlebrook to schedule.
Well, by the way, by a civil suit, but not presumably by some criminal process. We're talking about criminal processes here.
I understand, Your Honor, and the ability or the analogy to the potential civil recovery is actually how the amount of restitution is most often arrived at. So there, I don't think there's any doubt.
Because I think your best argument on restitution is the procedural business about he didn't advance this argument in the trial court, I believe.
Well, he certainly didn't do that, Your Honor. If I may, Your Honor, just move back to the shareholder note for a moment. Let me posit that Mr. Middlebrook, on the day he filed his bankruptcy schedules, erroneously believed that he could, in fact, pay the shareholder note. Let's say that was erroneous. I'm not conceding that it was erroneous. I don't think it was erroneous. But let's just say that on the day he filed those bankruptcy schedules, he believed he could pay the note. But he made the decision not to pay it, not to schedule it, to conceal it, because his intent is not to pay it. That makes his subjective intent, his intended loss, the same as the amount of the note. And whether or not he could or couldn't pay it, that is the loss he intends. I move on, Your Honor, to the fact that the district court would, in fact, I believe, resentence the defendant identically. He received a downward variance of almost just a whisker away from a 50% downward variance from the low end of the guideline range that he now argues the court ought to have found. And I think the most important thing that we have that contradicts his position now, or his own words in his objections to the PSR, which are in my brief, that he never gave the bankruptcy trustee or his creditors the impression he did not have the funds to repay his debts. He instructed the bankruptcy court that he'd received money from Federal Telecom in the form of distributions or deferred income, giving the creditors the impression that he had the money to repay his debts, leaving them with additional recourse for pursuing recovery of Federal Telecom. And the district court said, I will make this statement that even if I calculated the guidelines incorrectly, and the district court was dealing with the same two-level swing that the defendant now argues for, although in a different basis he makes the argument at this point, that even if I calculated the guidelines incorrectly and even if I were to accept the position of the defendant, that would be my sentence. And this is the most important part, I believe, of that quote. I have felt that given those reasons that I just said, that is the number of victims and the fact of multiple different types of crimes that were committed here, that that's the appropriate sentence. So what the district court said, I'm not focusing as much on loss as I might in other situations. He identified other factors that he relied on more in granting the downward variance. The correct guideline calculation is generally required. I have no argument with that being the law from this court. But where the exception is harmless, it's not necessary. And in this situation, it's not necessary to send it back, given the relative clarity of Judge Reinhardt's position on how he would resentence the defendant. If there were an absolute rule that there had to be a correct sentencing guideline calculation and that that could never be harmless error, this court would always have remanded those, but we have cited cases in which remands were not necessary. So it's not an absolute rule.
Mr. Love, your position is that the district court never actually, on the restitution, found an actual loss, right?
No, and the defendant did not.
He could have found it.
Yes, he could have.
But we don't have it. I mean, we don't have a finding.
No, we only have, you're correct, Your Honor, we only have the inference from what he stated.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Love. Mr. Omar?
Thank you, Your Honors. If I may speak briefly to the district court's disclaimer of giving Mr. Middlebrook the same sentence. The district court should not have the right to declare its error harmless and insulate itself from an incorrect sentence.
Is there a risk if there were a remand of an increased sentence?
There is that risk, Your Honor. The district court would be able to sentence him however it felt appropriate.
But, you know, district judges don't say that all the time. Sometimes they calculate the guidelines and fix a sentence, and if there's an error, they change and they do something different. So I'm not sure that we should adopt a rule that tells district courts that they can't make this kind of statement that we see in the transcript here. I mean, you described this as insulating their sentence from review. We still review all sentences for reasonableness, and so we would be looking at Mr. Middlebrook's 32-month sentence for reasonableness. But all the district judge is saying is, I really, 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 really think the 32 months is the right sentence for this guy.
Yes, and if the district court maintains that 32 months is the appropriate sentence, the district court is still required to calculate the guidelines correctly. And so a remand for resentencing is necessary so Mr. Middlebrook's substantial rights in receiving an appropriate guideline calculation sentence should be addressed as well. And Mr. Middlebrook's inability to repay this note at the time of the bankruptcy filing was evident from the trial, where there was evidence that showed that they had liquidated real estate, jewelry, they sold horses, they put a lot of money back into the company to keep it viable, and their efforts didn't last very long. Shortly after the bankruptcy filing, they were converted to Chapter 7 liquidation, and the doors were actually shut. So the government makes a note of a choice Mr. Middlebrook made. He didn't choose to pour all this money into the company and then refuse to pay. It was his understanding at the time that the shareholder note was worthless, and for that reason, Your Honors, we ask that this case be remanded for resentencing.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Omar. So, thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.